We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal's coming up in a moment. This hour of the show on WGR is brought to you by UBMD Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. For urgent orthopedic care, visit uborthocare.com. Sal will be on the headlines. Sal's on the sidelines. I guess he could be on the headlines too. But he'll be on the sidelines Sunday at New Era Field. Weather looking magnificent. Sunny, mid-60s. Not much of a breeze either for the Bills and Dolphins game. Sal's joining us on a Western Hotline brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it is the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? Happy Football Friday there, Mr. Capaccio. How you doing?
I'm good. I have some friends coming in from Florida for the game, and it'll be really cold for them, even though it's in the 60s.
Did you tell them to bring sweaters? It's mid-60s. Yeah.
I have a friend. He keeps saying, should I wear long johns? And I'm like, oh yeah, Lord. I mean, you could. Oh, I said, there'll be people wearing shorts at the game, but for you, it's like, yeah, you probably should. I don't know. I said, you'll be fine, but, you know, I said, wear a couple layers of socks. You never know. Your feet might get a little cold. I don't know how to treat that because, like, he's basically a Floridian, you know, been there pretty much his whole life. Was born up here, actually, in a little town called Canastillo. You guys know where that is?
Yeah.
And then moved away when he was young. So he's a Dolphins fan, actually, and wanted to come up for the Dolphins game. But they're going to have a good time. But I keep telling him, like, when you land today, it's not even going to be 50 degrees. So just be ready.
Yeah. Turtleneck, winter coat,
layers.
All that stuff.
Can't go wrong with layers.
That's right.
Layer up. You can always take stuff off.
Yeah. Let's get the injury report out of the way first here, Sal. It is brought to you by Univera Healthcare. Compare because you care at univeraforbusiness.com. Whose status is in doubt for Sunday at this point?
I would say Matt Milano's, you know, not officially doubtful, but the way that practice has read, we'll get the official, you know, out declarations or doubtful or who's going to be playing in the game. Questionable, I should say, a little bit later today. But I think Matt Milano is not really in a great spot right now, not practicing in full the first 2 days. We've seen this before with hamstrings, Devin Singletary, notably, Taron Johnson, you know, what they've done here, and they've slow played, as you guys know. So we'll see if Matt Milano is able to play. Looks like, and the good news that Corey Thompson, even though he's probably not going to be able to play this week based on his limited participation, he's at least trending in the right direction, but I don't think he's going to be available. But I think the Tyler Kroft guys is probably going to make his Bills debut the way it's gone this week, and he's been able to practice. The one injury that popped up that we talked about the other day was John Brown on the injury report. But yesterday, Sean McDermott told us that it was just some tightness, and he was officially limited yesterday, but we'll keep an eye on that. You never know. You want to make sure he gets through the week okay, but I don't think it's anything to be too concerned about right now.
Josh Allen showed up on the injury report this week with the hand injury, but he's been practicing fully, right? So I take it there's nothing to worry about?
Yeah, and, you know, the Tennessee game, it looked like he took a bit of a shot on it after a play. I noticed him coming off the sideline kind of shaking his hand. A few people did. And they looked at him for a second, but he finished the game. So, you know, I think this is just making sure they do their due diligence and stick with, you know, league mandates and stuff like that if there's any issue whatsoever, but it doesn't look like there's anything to be concerned about there.
You mentioned Kroft, and I want to bring up Devin Singletary. Does it look like he'll be back? And if so, do we expect a greater workload for Devin Singletary, who had in not quite two full games, 10 carries?
Sure. I mean, if Devin Singletary is going to be available to play, I think at some point here they want to not have Frank Gore be the guy carrying every football. And they want to get Devin Singletary a little bit more involved, I would think. Now, I don't think he's going to go out there and have 25 carries. But, you know, he only had 10 carries over the first 2 weeks. And I would expect him to get double-digit touches in some capacity, especially if the game goes the way the Bills would hope and the way people expect, which is, you know, they get a lead and they don't have to go out there and, you know, fight for everything to win this game. And maybe they can sit back, they can hand the ball off to him, they can rotate their backs a little bit, keep those guys fresh. So, you know, by the end of the day, I wouldn't be surprised if Devin Singletary has 15 plus touches, and that would be really nice to get him back integrated into the offense, and then we'll see where it goes from there. But I also think part of it is, you know, Frank Gore has been, you know, he's 36 and he's been really carrying the ball mostly here for the team. And at some point, I think you'd like to back off on him if you can have that opportunity.
It's funny. I saw one of the articles about this game from, I think it was from South Florida, about how the Dolphins are talking about how they got to stop Frank Gore. And I'm like, where is that coming from? You know, I don't mean that as a slight to Frank Gore, but it's not like they feed him the ball 30 times a game and they you know, their offense is built around Frank Gore.
Well, I think that would mean that they're basically, they need to stop the Bills running the football, right? And Frank Gore has been their lead guy. So, yeah, I think that's probably what that is. And Frank Gore has so much respect in this league that, you know, you do have to stop him. And he's having a good year. You know, he's running the ball well. So, you know, that's probably where it comes from mostly, which is, you know, they got to stop the run, maybe force the Bills to try and throw the ball. They have been okay at throwing the ball this year. They've been good at times. Their numbers aren't indicative of a great passing team, obviously. So if I'm the Dolphins, I think that's my game plan too. You know, I mean, stop the Bills' run and force them to throw, and maybe Josh Allen can make a few mistakes. I think if you're the Dolphins, you probably have to think that that's your best path to victory.
And yet I would tell you, Sal, that I would feel very confident that hopefully Brian Daboll comes out and says we're going to attack with the pass, because
100%.
They don't
100%.
Have.
I hope so too.
Yeah,
I'd like to see Robert Foster a little more involved.
Yes.
I'd like to see a couple shots down the field. You know, I think one of the keys for me to this game is don't give this team any life. You know, they have a guy in Ryan Fitzpatrick we know can be a gunslinger. That's his mentality. His guys like playing for him. He's going to go down the field a few times, and you know, if he connects on a shot or two, you don't want to give them an opportunity to be up on you. You know, early second quarter, it's 14-7 or something. You're like, wait a minute, we're in a ball game here. I think I'd like to see some shots down the field. I'd like to see the Bills attack aggressively early and try to, you know, get on top of this team as quickly as they can.
Yeah, with Foster, I know it's like there's different answers here. His role diminishing as much as it has. He's got 3 targets, no catches. I know he's missed a couple games with injury, and we all know that. You know, Brown and Beasley have become the focal point of the passing offense, but I'm still surprised at how Foster has practically disappeared from this offense.
Yeah, I think I am as well, based on what I expected from him from this offseason. Then I think about it and say, where am I going to get his snap counts from, though?
Yeah,
like,
right.
who is he going to replace? Now, you could have made the argument that he should have been on the field maybe instead of Zay Jones up until this point. But, you know, Zay Jones did things that they thought were good for the entire offense, which is blocking, you know, the route running, stuff like that. And, you know, Robert still is a young player. Let's remember, has he played 16 games yet? I don't think he has.
I think 13 last year, and then he did 2 or 3 this year.
And he might have, and, you know, I'm thinking because he came in last year, like the last 7 games really is when he played.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
He had the
right,
one game,
right.
and then he didn't play. So, you know, he really hasn't even played kind of a full season yet. He's still a young player who's growing, and you guys know what they feel about young players, and sometimes they're ready to come in, but a lot of times they want to bring them along as best they can. And I think he's just in a situation here where he's still learning all the nuances of what they want him to learn. They're not comfortable with necessarily him having a full plate, and he still will have a role, and he'll still have a niche in the offense, and then maybe that will grow. I agree with you. I expected going into the year that he'd have a bigger role, but then I think about it and say he's not going to play. He's not going to take snaps from John Brown.
Right.
He's not going to take snaps from Cole Beasley. And then, you know, now with the situation with Zay being gone, maybe this is an opportunity for him to get on the field a little bit more.
I was curious about that, Sal, because against Tennessee, if I remember correctly, I think Duke Williams was on the field for 51 snaps, which is a big number.
It was second to only John Brown. I think John Brown had 52.
So do you think essentially Zay Jones's snaps go to Duke Williams? Do they get spread around? Or is this one of those game plan specific? There'll be some weeks where they think Duke Williams is a good matchup. There'll be others where maybe it is Robert Foster or somebody else.
Yeah, and in that game, by the way, Zay snaps essentially did just go to Duke, right? Because, I mean, Zay only played one.
Yeah.
And Duke played the rest of them, which is 51. Well, I should say he played 51. They had 70-something snaps, I believe, but you get the point. At this point, I would probably think in a game like this, it might be different, though, Howard. You know, if you do get a lead and you can do some things, I'd probably expect it a little bit more of a rotation, get guys in there. You know, I wonder if Duke Williams is a guy, and I know he did last game, and that's great, but is that a guy they want to count on having that many snaps going forward? Maybe not. Maybe it's a game plan thing. Maybe they thought against Tennessee, that's the kind of game where a guy, because the run game was going to be important, wet field, let's get him out there, he can block for us, things like that. Maybe they thought that was a particular game for Duke Williams to get those kinds of snaps. I'm very curious about it as well. I think that as they go forward here, the way the Bills have operated with how they treat their roster, how they try to develop players, I think those things are going to be massaged as you go through the season. So to sit here and say, like, yeah, I think it's going to be Duke Williams getting the lion's share or Robert Foster, that's probably very fluid. We know one thing. We know it's John Brown and Cole Beasley. I think after that, you never know. I even think Andre Roberts still comes into play here on the offense, getting snaps. So I think all three of those guys essentially. And then Isaiah McKenzie, we know he's good for a handful of snaps when a game, and they try to get him on the field to get something going with him. I don't see that changing that much. You know, I think he's that kind of guy where he's more of a specialty type of situational guy where we're going to give him a handful of snaps and he's going to make a play or two for us. And then the rest of the guys, like Andre Roberts, Duke Williams now, and Robert Foster, they'll get into the game and maybe based on game plan, situation, team they're playing, maybe each week it's different how they play.
Talking about all these passing weapons, Sal, where do you come down on the 300 yards thing? You know, we're waiting to see it from, not just from Josh Allen, but from a Bills quarterback. And I think a lot of fans might be looking at this game and saying, okay, great opportunity to finally put this thing away, have a 300-yard passer. Maybe it's not in the cards for them every week because they're not in a lot of shootouts. But I do think it's a thing worth noting that they've gone 35-plus games without one. And to get that, put to bed for a little while would be kind of nice.
I do think it's much more of a team thing at this point. I don't think it's an Allen thing necessarily. And I say that because, Jeremy, at one point, Allen did have, I think he had 200 yards at halftime one of these games, didn't he?
Yep.
He had, like,
Giants game, I think. Yeah.
And then they didn't have the ball as much in the second half. They backed off. They started running the ball more. He had another game where he had 140-something yards at halftime. So I think this is more of a team thing, and they're not forcing it, that's for sure, right? They're not trying to – and I'm not even mean by trying to get him 300 yards. They're not forcing the issue in the passing game. They're trying to win the game the way they need to win the game. And a lot of times that comes down to running the football. But, yes, we see what's happening around the league. We see that that's generally the way that teams are winning is by having a passer and throwing the ball down the field. I like the fact they're not forcing it, and it doesn't matter. If they're going to win games, that's truly all that matters. And that's what everybody down there will tell you. But I'd like to see it. I'd like to see – this has kind of become a point where it's becoming a distraction in a way that we're talking about it, and you don't want it to be where someone's trying to force something like Josh Allen or – I'm not saying he would, right? But it reminds me a little bit of the playoff drought. That's all we talked about a lot. It's getting to the point where, hey, come on, like, when is this going to happen? When is this going to happen? And then it becomes just in the back of your mind when you're thinking about a lot of other things. So, yeah, I'd like to see it. Here's the thing, though. I don't know if this week is the week. You know, the Dolphins have only allowed 300 yards twice because teams don't need to throw on them once they're up big.
Yeah, the game's been over by halftime at the latest, and then they're probably, which is maybe one reason why they're giving up 170 rushing yards a game. They're building leads, and then they're just running the ball.
Yeah, and then, I mean, for example, guys, I'll tell you what this is. Let me look it up right now. I got it right here. I was just looking at it. I'm going to pull it up again. So somebody tweeted me the other day. You guys were asking, I think, you know, what would impress you? I think when I was in with you, Jeremy,
you said,
what would impress you? And, you know, lots of people said, they got to throw for over 300 yards and three touchdowns. I'm like, well, wait a minute. The Miami Dolphins defense this year, because the team is bad and they're just allowing, they're just down and teams don't have to necessarily throw on them. Here's how many yards they've allowed through the air. 379 the first week. And you're like, oh, my God. After that, 264, 246, 317, and 166. They're not, teams aren't just lighting them up through the air because they don't have to. So, if you're expecting the Bills to impress you by having to go out there and throw for 350 yards, I'm sorry, it's probably not going to happen because teams don't have to do that to beat the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, if it's Atlanta, it's a different story. Atlanta's giving up tons in the passing game, and their offense can also still get you. Yeah, so you end up in a lot
exactly
of shootouts.
That's exactly right. So you have to make sure you're still pressing the issue a little bit as you go through a game with them. Whereas Miami, if you're up maybe by three scores and you're in early second half, you can kind of maybe dial it back a little bit, get to the end of the game and say, okay, let's get out of here and get to next week.
I'm just trying to find ways to make this game a little bit more interesting, you know. Betting with the spread might do that. Betting your friends about over under 300 passing yards might do that, because the game itself, you know, I know that we know a little bit about Fitz and his ability to sometimes shock people. I mean, the Bills are not about to be surprised by Ryan Fitzpatrick, so at least I wouldn't think. So just try to add a little bit of juice to the game, you know?
I think that does add to it. I think that that's a good way to look at it. You know, what can they do numbers-wise? I think it could become a stats game. You can kind of put some numbers on that. For me, it's about points in this game. The Bills need to score some points. You know, Miami's been giving up a lot of points this year, obviously. We know that. I mean, the numbers they've been getting up have gone down. But other than the Washington game they played last week, guys, they've given up 30 or more points a game. Yeah. They've given up 43 and 59 in a couple different games. So to me, like, score points. Where can you get to on the scoreboard? And I don't think the Bills have to score 30 necessarily. They're not necessarily built like that either. But I'd like to see them in the mid-20s at least comfortably winning this game.
It's not just this game, Sal. I think the offense was the story of the offseason. It was the story of training camp. It was the story of the first five games, and it continues to be the story. The defense is playing at a top level, but the offense has got to do better than 18 points a game. And it doesn't necessarily mean 300 passing yards, but it means finishing drives off more, even Sean McDermott said it this week, more points. They've got 11 touchdowns in five games, and I need to see more from the offense, production, finishing, points, to couple with this tremendous defense. I need to see more from the offense, not just Sunday, but it's the rest of the season these guys have to get better.
And I think the biggest thing there is, you just said finishing. That's the big thing, Howard. I mean, I think they have to stop hurting themselves, and that's what's hurt them from getting points in some of these games. We know that, to me, they would have scored more points if they did not turn the ball over the way they did against the Jets, right? I think that, the Giants was a nice game. They got to 28 points right there. New England, they turned the ball over. I'm not saying they would have scored a lot of points. They would have given themselves more chances, though, to score points for sure. And I think that that's been the issue here, where they've been hurting themselves with some penalties at critical times and especially the turnovers. So finish the game. Don't have any turnovers. And finish your drive by getting points. Because once they get to the red zone, they've been great. The Bills are number one in the league. They're tied at number one in the league in red zone touchdown percentage. That's a really nice number. They've scored on 10 of their touchdowns, on 10 of their 14 red zone trips. That's really good. And so get there. Get to the red zone, score a touchdown, maybe score from outside there, however it is. But I agree with you. Score some points. But I think eliminate the turnovers, and I think those points will start to come.
Any thoughts on the Mahomes injury? We don't have a time frame, Sal, but there are multiple reports that the best case scenario is he is missing 3 weeks at the very least. How this could impact things in the AFC and how it might impact things from the Bills' perspective.
Well, I do think it impacts things in the AFC, but I don't know if it impacts them enough if he's only out 3 weeks or 4 weeks to say that they're not going to win the division. I look around that division. I don't think the Chargers are really all that good this year. The Raiders, I don't know what to think about them. I still don't think they're the team that's going to be up there at the end. You have to remember, they still have a 3-win lead. They're 5-2, the Chiefs. The Raiders are 3-2. I mean, even if Mahomes misses 4 weeks, they could still very well be in first place. But here's the other thing. He's been dealing with an ankle injury. Now he's dealing with this. Even if he comes back in 4 weeks, how healthy is he going to be the rest of the year? How effective is he going to be the rest of the year? This conference is right there right now, and I don't think that maybe Brandon Bean goes to work today and says, boy, this is the year. Like, what can we do? How can we add? Because we do have a chance here. I don't know if that's his thinking, but I certainly think in general, it feels like this is the year for someone to jump in there, and the Bills are as good a candidate as anyone the way the rest of the conference looks. And if they can just stay the course here and do what they need to do, they might have an opportunity to do something maybe even in January.
All right, here's the deal, Sal, before we let you go. I'm half awake. Jeremy, I think, is working on a coffee-induced energy rush.
Yeah, and it's not my usual coffee. My usual coffee shop wasn't open. Mm-hmm.
Hint, hint, message.
Big problem there.
So I need you to put in your thinking cap because I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a challenging trivia question this morning.
Oh, okay.
Challenging trivia question. Christian McCaffrey is on pace to lead the league in total yards from scrimmage. In fact, he's on pace to record the second highest total ever in total yards from scrimmage. What we're looking for, gentlemen, and Mr. Kramer, I will throw you in there as well. I'm looking for the last 10 individuals to lead the NFL in total yards from scrimmage.
Ooh.
They are all running backs except one guy. There's one wide receiver on this list.
Calvin Johnson?
No, but that's a good guess. But actually, you should get the wide receiver. He's helped you in fantasy.
Julio Jones.
Julio Jones in 2015 is the only receiver on this list. The rest are running backs.
Okay. Le'Veon Bell.
Le'Veon Bell is not on this list.
Why is he holding out for a new contract then?
Somebody should have brought that up.
Where does this guy get off?
Someone should have told the Jets about this.
LaDainian Tomlinson.
He is not. We're going back to 2009. Yeah, we're going back to 2009.
I was wondering if it was within the range.
09 to 18.
Well, I think last year was Zeke Elliott, or 2 years ago.
No, wait, Saquon Barkley.
Saquon Barkley was last year.
Very good. 2018.
Yes, because when I did the research on the Giants game, I remember that. I'm like, wow, he led the league in yards from scrimmage last year.
There is a former Buffalo Bill on this list.
That's easy. That's probably, bang on, former Bill? Probably Marshawn Lynch.
Nope.
Nope.
More current former Bill. This season former
LeSean
Bill.
LeSean McCoy.
LeSean McCoy led the league in total yards after scrimmage in 2013 in Philly.
Oh.
I didn't say he played with Buffalo at the time, but former Buffalo Bill. Let's see.
You said there's a receiver?
We already got
you
that
already
one.
Got him. The rest are running backs.
So, okay. So, who do you have? All right. So I'm confused right now. Who do we have?
You got Barkley, Julio, McCoy. Three guys.
Adrian Peterson.
Adrian Peterson is correct in 2012. Okay. Very good. Missing 2017, 2016, 14, 11,
is,
10,
is
9.
There a Chris Johnson in here?
Chris Johnson in 2009 is the first guy on this
awesome.
List.
Awesome.
Very
good. Good guess. Good job. Good
is
job.
There a David Johnson in there?
There is a David Johnson wow. in 2016. You're missing any 2017.
Other, are we missing other Johnsons?
No other okay. Johnsons. The Johnsons are closed. you're missing 2017, 2014, 2011, 2010. 2010, 2011, 2014 are no longer in the league, first of all. They are all three running backs.
How about really wanted to guess Larry Johnson right there, but you said the Johnsons are closed.
There's no more Johnsoning.
How about Jamal Charles?
No, but same franchise.
All right, I'm hanging around the Chiefs here for a reason.
Oh, no, I got my Jamals wrong. I'm sorry.
Jamal Lewis?
Jamal Lewis okay. franchise. Think Jamal Lewis franchise, not
Ray
him.
Ray Rice?
Ray Rice wow. in 2011 ooh. Led the league in total yards from scrimmage. Okay, so let's see. You got three more.
That's the only, by the way, when you, I mean, that was the first Baltimore. I couldn't think. I'm like, there's no
yeah,
other
Jamal,
Baltimore.
Jamal, I was confusing my Jamals.
Thank you.
2017. All right, this guy's still in the league. Had a really big year, cashed in with a really big contract extension in 2018 because
Todd
of it.
Todd Gurley.
Todd mm-hmm. Gurley. Very good. Okay, so we're looking for 2014, 2010. All right, guy in 2014.
Just trying to think of the last 10 years of fantasy football top three picks. That's really what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
This guy played on a team that was known for having a good offensive line. Still does when they're healthy. DeMarco
Murray.
Murray. Very good, very good. Okay, and your last one in 2010. Led the NFL in rushing that year, 1,600-plus yards. Injuries really limited him in his career with this franchise. If I give you the franchise, you'll probably get it right. He had four 1,000-yard seasons in 6 years with this AFC South team, but injuries curtailed his production. Played with Miami briefly after he was with Houston.
Arian Foster
in 2010. And you, gentlemen, have all 10 answers.
Thank you.
There'll be a little extra something in your next paycheck, all of y'all.
By the way, is that 10 different guys?
Yes. No repeat guys.
Huh.
I'd have to go back and check the last time. I didn't actually look for that, Sal. I'm curious now.
Last time somebody repeated?
Somebody repeated. I mean, Thurman would have done it, right?
I would have guessed
years ago.
Marshall
I would have guessed Adrian Peterson had been a multiple guy there.
Well, again, this is only back to 2009. So he
might
have done
right.
it.
I still would have, but you're right. I mean, I'm thinking, and I think because he had such monster years running the ball. You know what I mean?
Okay. I will have an answer when we get back.
All right.
Mr. Capaccio, we will hear from you on Sunday, and we will talk to you on Football Monday. Have a glorious weekend.
You too, guys. Thanks.
Sal's segment on the Western Hotline brought to us by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it is the place to buy a case.
When we get back, I want to talk about a potential all-time great that last night I thought about a list of players that would be fun to remember. We'll get to that.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey. podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Tipped ahead and again, Mittelstadt, Cherry on his way, takes the pass, scores! A one-timer rocket, and the Buffalo Sabres repeating some recent history from last night, taking a 2-0 lead early.
That was one of the first moments of the game last night in the Sabres' win over the LA Kings, and the morning after the game highlights brought to you by Firth, the Firth Moments of the Game brought to you by Forth. For all the moments in your life, go Forth to Firth.
Sabres get a win with all the production coming from a line that hadn't really produced. The Mittelstadt, VZ, and Sherry line. Connor Sherry back, and that was a big boost for them. Sherry now has 3 goals on the season. Mittelstadt 2. He scored 2 last night. Yep. And the Sabres win. Boy, they got throttled down the stretch.
For the last 2 periods.
Pretty much.
After that third goal, it was pretty much Los Angeles. There was, you go back and look at the last 3.5 minutes, 3.5 to 4 minutes of that second period. For most of it, they never got out past their blue line.
Housley's teams rarely had leads to protect, so we didn't really get a look at how he protected a lead or how his teams did.
Yeah.
This is a little bit like the Bielsma years. Bielsma's teams kind of locked it down, and it's always interesting to hear a coach say, "Oh no, nothing changes." How do you know what? If nothing changes, then you've got to be furious that you get destroyed like that.
It's funny. I was thinking about, you asked me earlier. Actually, let me get the headlines, and I want to bring up something you asked me earlier about. Sabres won 3-0. Carter Hutton, 47 saves. The most saves for a Sabres goalie in a shutout in the regular season. The Sabres play at San Jose tomorrow night. John Tavares has a broken finger. He's going to miss at least 2 weeks of action for the Leafs. John Brown, Matt Milano, limited at practice for the Bills yesterday. We're scheduled to chat with Sean McDermott around 9:15 this morning. The Bills brought back wide receiver Ray McLeod for the practice squad. Ray McLeod. Kansas City beat Denver 30-6. The story in that game is the Patrick Mahomes injury. He suffered a dislocated kneecap. He's undergoing an MRI today to determine if there is ligament damage. At best right now, the reports are suggesting he will miss 3 weeks. The Astros beat the Yankees 8-3. The Astros lead that series 3-1. Game 5 is tonight. You asked me something earlier this morning about, you know, how they were getting, you know, smothered, whatever, run on. The last 2 periods, was I worried? I wasn't, because I didn't think LA was going to score. Maybe they started hitting the net more often, but Hutton was playing really well.
Right, but the question...
But I will tell you this. If you want to look at, is this troubling, this is Montreal, Florida, and L.A. Games where they had leads, and then they're getting outshot like 19-5, 19-7.
Well, they're very different. I mean, I don't mind getting outshot when you have a lead. The problem comes in where, against Florida and against Montreal, you had a 2-goal lead, it got to 1, and they got all the way back.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens if L.A. scores a goal to start the third last night?
I still wouldn't have been nervous. I thought Hutton was playing really well.
Do they stay in their shell?
Or do they say, all right,
let's dial it back up a little bit? Because
I think you got to look to score at that point.
In these spots, a lot of coaches say, no, nothing's different. And I just, there's no way that they would have been happy with the way that they played in the final 2 periods if it's anything other than, let's just get out of here and survive and win this game 3-0. Which, if that's your strategy, okay.
Mm-hmm.
It worked. It might not be the best strategy, but it did work.
It might not have been the strategy in the second period at the 3-minute mark, but I think for sure it was the strategy going into the third period. Yeah. And then they get outshot, whatever it would have been, 19-2, whatever the heck it was in the third period.
47 saves. Yeah, in terms of the underlying numbers from the Sabres, they still have good numbers. The only thing that is really jumping out as something that won't stay where it is Hutton's save percentage.
Yeah, he's at 950.
Yeah.
It's not, you know.
So that's going to come back, and their shooting percentage might come back a little bit too. But, hey, you got 2 points, so whatever.
We need to rewind the show. What did you tease?
I teased a list of great players that have been forgotten.
Okay.
And it's because of last night's game. Because last night, hey, look, there's Ilya Kovalchuk. Remember him? He was great.
Yeah.
He was more than a point-per-game player in Atlanta when he was there, went to New Jersey, and was still really good. And now he's with the Kings, and he's got 6 points in 7 games. He scored a pair of goals. But, I mean, Kovalchuk's not nearly what he once was. Of course, he did leave the United States for a solid 5-6 years.
Yeah. And he had some really good chances last night, actually, but wasn't able to bury
36
anything.
Years old, but man, when he was young and he was the number one overall pick, he comes in, scores 29 goals as a rookie, and then goes over 40 goals every year he's in Atlanta.
With a franchise that, at the time, wasn't very good. I mean, he was the face of that franchise on some pretty mediocre Thrashers teams.
Yeah. 40 goals the year he got traded to New Jersey as well, and 140-plus goal season with New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
All-time forgotten. You know, if you could have a formula that's has to be great, and then how many people forgot about that guy, Kovalchuk's got to be way up there.
Well, part of it is because he left the country.
He left. I mean,
he was out of our NHL consciousness for however many years he was playing in Russia. You know, it would be almost as if, say, Ovechkin went back to Russia for like 5 years. We wouldn't be sitting here talking about he's chasing Gretzky's record and could he actually break that and all the great things he's done, because you would have forgotten about him. Mm-hmm. Although, again, I think what also hurts Kovalchuk, he's in Atlanta. He's not in the playoffs. You know, Ovechkin's with Washington. They're in the playoffs. Crosby's with Pittsburgh. They're in the playoffs. The guys in Chicago. Atlanta made it one time, I think, when Kovalchuk was there and got swept
by the Rangers.
So if you're not in the this is like what we talk about with Jack. You want to really be appreciated and get everybody to notice you? Okay, play in the playoffs. And that's not Kovalchuk's fault. But, you know, he was just playing regular season games and never got a chance to shine on the big postseason national stage.
What a strange career, right? 250 goal seasons for him. He's one of a handful of players to have multiple 50 goal seasons. And Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Tough place to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, on some really, really bad hockey teams, unfortunately.
The other thing we teased was you were going to look to see who the last guy lead the league in yards for scrimmage back-to-back years was.
It's a good thing you got a memory.
I didn't. Somebody texted it in.
Tiki Barber, 2004-2005, is the last guy. And I bet no one would have guessed Tiki Barber.
It would have been tough.
Maybe one person?
It would have been tough.
I would never have guessed Tiki Barber.
Does that count returning kicks? Because that's always a way to cheat your yards from scrimmage, is to return kicks, if that is counted.
I will pull up his stats. He had 2,390 total yards.
Probably not.
I think it's just catching and receiving, or catching and running, rather.
Yeah. If it's 2,300, it's got to be just those two.
No, you know what? 2,018. Yeah, no, it's just those two.
Okay.
Yeah. He had 1,860 yards rushing and 530 yards receiving. So it is just those two. And Adrian Peterson actually had done it once before, but he didn't do it in back-to-back years. The last guy back-to-back was Tiki Barber. Let's get to Mark in Toronto here on WGR. Welcome, Mark. Go right ahead.
Morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Real quick, first of all, love the show. And even though I'm from Toronto, love listening to Buffalo. Go Bills. Quick thing about officiating. I've been listening to the talk all week. I want to throw an idea and hear your perspective. What if, regardless of what's being challenged, the referees only get to look at it in real time? I think that might take away from the perfection standard and move it back to a reasonable standard, add the humanity back in the game, and hopefully give more deference to the calls in the field. Also, if they don't have the frame-by-frame in the slow-mo, I think then that might have coaches second-guess whether or not to throw a challenge flag, or regardless of the sport. But I want to hear your take on it and see what you think. Thanks. Go on, squish the fish.
I like it.
The part about real time, what did he? So there's no replay at all?
Just
the guy upstairs is looking at it?
If I could shorten it all, pretend we don't have the ability to slow down film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you look at it live and you determine penalty or not.
And that goes for coaches too.
Okay. Well,
there's no more slow motion.
Yeah,
none.
It'd be really difficult.
The official
to
goes over there. He can watch it from three different angles, but it's always going to be in real time.
So you still get a replay. You just don't slow the replay down. Mm-hmm. It's not just watching it live and you make your decision. Okay, where I was confused at. You get to look at a replay, but in regular speed.
Boy, don't you just know that if you went to Foxborough, the replays would be 1.5 times speed? You just know they would do something with that.
Hey, what happened there? I couldn't really see where the guy's hand was on that play.
Yeah. I guess we can't challenge that one.
Oh,
we can't overturn
Lord.
That. I don't mind that. Part of what is so ridiculous is when they're trying to see if the ball moved slightly. He's moving it from this hand to the next. And,
right.
and that's when football, to me, in most of these replays, sounds the dumbest. Where we're all sitting around saying, what are we here for?
Yeah.
We're here for the speed of the game. And all we do is slow it down and see if we can see a blade of grass between the sideline and the guy's foot. So I don't mind that at all.
I guess it would help. I think it would make challenges more difficult, not having the ability to slow it down freeze frame, all the different things they do, zoom in, all that stuff. So my guess is there would be fewer stoppages, fewer challenges, because you just, you know, even on a replay, if it's full speed, you wouldn't be as certain as you might be if stuff is slowed down and you got a chance to really look and see where's the guy's knee, where's the ball, where's this, where's that. 803-0550 to join us this morning. The Sabres won last night. We're taking your calls on the win over the Kings. But, of course, we're talking Bills football because it is Football Friday, and the Bills are taking on the Miami Dolphins on Sunday. Football Friday on WGR is brought to you by Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino, the official casino of the Buffalo Bills. We're expecting a big win on Sunday. I will tell you that when you deal with Buffalo Materials Handling, your business gets a big win. That's right, BMH. They can help you out with whatever you need, whether it's pallet racks or forklifts or floor scrubbers or scissor lifts. When you need to lift it, move it, or service it, you need to turn to the winning team, Buffalo Materials Handling. Supplies, they have it for you. Parts department, top-notch, get you a part really fast. Service department is better than anybody else's. There's an award called the Platinum Award. It goes out to the best service department in Western New York. Year after year after year, it goes to Buffalo Materials Handling. Now, if you have a business that involves handling materials, you know if a forklift isn't working, anything is not working properly, it's costing you money. It's not a good thing. So their service department at BMH will be there with a prompt response with factory-trained technicians, award-winning technicians who will solve your problems quickly. You can even get a preventative maintenance schedule for your fleet set up by the folks at Buffalo Materials Handling. A lot of businesses are with them 10, 15, 20-plus years because they're so good when it comes to service and everything that company needs. Find out more how they can help your business. 894-6370. If you want to give them a call, 894-6370. Or just Google Buffalo Materials Handling. When you need to lift it, move it, or service it, they'll help you handle it. Buffalo Materials Handling, more than just forklifts.
And my understanding is Patrick Mahomes does, in fact, have a dislocated kneecap, as James Palmer, who was on the scene last night, told us pretty quickly thereafter. That is the facts of what we know right now. He's also going to get an MRI later today to determine ligament damage. And look, you guys saw it, as everyone did. It looked like a dire situation on the field, as bad as it could be. Pretty quickly thereafter, though, optimism came. I talked to several people involved in this situation. The view right now is that Patrick Mahomes is expected to miss about 3 weeks pending the results of the MRI.
This is Ian Rappaport from NFL Network with the news, the latest on Patrick Mahomes, who went down on a quarterback sneak in last night's game against the Denver Broncos. Matt Moore came on and the Chiefs rolled anyway, 30-6. To move their record to 5-2. It is Football Friday, brought to you by Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino, the official casino of the Buffalo Bills. The Bills, heavy favorites for Sunday against the winless Miami Dolphins. Are you expecting a blowout? Besides the obvious, I'm going to guess most of you are, by the way. I did put up a web poll, which might be the rare 100% to 0% web poll. I guess someone will vote no.
I'm excited to answer this question.
No, it's simple. Will the Bills beat Miami Sunday? Yes or no? Who's voting no? So anyway, I'm going to guess it's going to be heavily slanted towards that. But besides the obvious of a win, I was either that or the web poll was, do you think oxygen is important? Like, if you're always looking for a slam dunk web poll, I could have gone with that. But this is close. Besides the obvious of a win, what else are you looking to get out of Sunday's game? We were talking about it earlier. A big explosion from the offense would be nice. A fun day with lots of points. Josh Allen throwing the ball all over the yard and a cakewalk. Okay, go ahead. I have a viewer tip.
I'm ready for it.
A viewer tip. Have you seen the story? You're an SEC guy. Have you seen the series Saturday in the South, the history of SEC football?
I have not.
You should go watch it. It's on ESPN, the family of channels. It's also on SEC Network if you get it. It actually goes back to the beginning of whatever they called it then. Maybe it was the SEC. Anyway, like 1890s. It's a complete history, and I think they're through 7 or 8 parts. It's really good. If you're like me and you're a history buff, you know, when football started way back when, you're going to hear about names that, you know, like trophies are named after and stadiums are named after, like John Heisman and him coaching at Georgia Tech. So it's a really well done special. A lot of interviews, highlights. Last night I watched the portion where Saban went from LSU to Alabama. Miles wins the national title at LSU. the Urban Meyer years at Florida, the Tim Tebow years with some great stuff with Tebow and the games he would have had in the national championship games. It's a really well-done special. And if you're a fan of sports, which I'm guessing you are since you're listening to us, look for it. Saturdays in the South, the history of SEC football. And as I said, it's I don't know how many total parts there are because it's covering 120-plus years, but it's very well done. So make sure you check it out if you're looking for something to watch.
Texter says, no one is guaranteed. You guys have been slamming away all week how this is a no-brainer. I hope you're right. Yeah, it is.
What do you want me to tell you? Be worried about it? Why would I tell you? If I'm not worried about it, why would I tell you to
the
be
Dolphins
worried about it?
Don't want, I mean, the players do, but the organization doesn't want them to win this game.
No win is guaranteed, by the way. I understand that. But if I'm telling you what's going to happen Sunday, I would expect this thing to be over and not close at all. Over at halftime.
You remember the movie Moneyball where the soda machine didn't work or something like that? Players were required to buy their own Gatorades or something like that.
I'm trying to recall the scene.
Specifically, it's not that important. I'm wondering if the Dolphins are doing things organizationally that are just tiny little ways to not help the team win. You know, like the Bills just built this brand new facility, $18 million.
Sounds like Major League.
Yeah.
Where you put them on a crappy plane.
Yes.
And maybe the ice, the machines for rehab don't work.
Guys, I'm sorry. The hot water's out again.
Cold showers.
You know, I'm going to call somebody about this. This is terrible.
No ice making machine for the ice tub.
If you're an organization that is tanking and decided to take away the thing that wins, which is good players.
Yeah.
And also, doesn't the coach have to wonder, wait a minute, was I hired because you think I'm bad at this? Doesn't he have to wonder that?
Yeah.
You're brought in to coach, and you know they don't want to win.
Right. It's a tough situation for Brian Flores. I do feel for him because how do you evaluate him? I don't know if he's a good head coach.
Right. How would you take that job?
Yeah.
What's
coming.
Wouldn't you have to – you would want assurances that you're going to make it out to see the other side? But even then
– And you're a guy off the Patriots staff. You would think – this is not going to be his only chance to be a head coach. That if you stayed in New England, by the way, now people are talking about this being maybe the best defense ever under Belichick. If you're Flores, you could have stayed in New England. You still would have won. You would have had a heck of a defense, and you could have maybe picked a better job. I don't know, because everybody knew what Miami was doing. The owner pretty much came out and said publicly, here's what we're going to do. And anyway, it does get back to the point about, yes, there's no win guaranteed, but they are pretty bereft of talent. You know, some of the better players they've had, they either moved on from the offseason or traded during this season. So, I mean, it's just, could Miami win? Well, yeah, anything's possible.
You think you can get that team to quit?
Miami?
Yeah.
You mean if they haven't already?
Yeah.
Yes. Guys are going to wonder at some point, like, they're 0-5 now, and if it's, why am I putting myself through this?
That's what, when we talked to Chris Whittingham about this, that was what he said. This is why they have a few players that are so happy to be in the league, they won't raise a stink.
Well, but I've been thinking there are a lot of guys. Look at Fitzpatrick, right? Fitzpatrick basically said, get me the hell out of here. Like, why would he want to stick around and be around for this stuff? So I would think there are a number of guys that are going to wonder why they're going out every Sunday and working during the week and leaving themselves susceptible to getting injured and doing all this stuff when basically the plan is to get to 0-16 and draft the quarterback you love. Yeah, I think a few guys would start packing.
And not just the quarterback, but a lot of picks. You know, they're stockpiling. So it's more than just
tons of cap space.
It's more than just tanking for that pick. It's three first rounders. Mm-hmm. So they will have a lot of stuff to put in place.
803-0550 to join us. Football Friday brought to you by Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino, the official casino of the Buffalo Bills.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.